Welcome back for another episode of the Half Court Press Podcast. After a real basketball day.
Yeah, it mattered.
The first day.
Yeah. How was it writing on deadline again?
Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
Yeah,
I don't know how you felt. We both had 8 p.m. starts, right?
Yeah. How much time did you have to write?
I had more than I...
Yeah.
I did not... I wasn't as efficient as I should have been. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It was late enough that I didn't transcribe anything.
Ooh, yeah.
It was like, I'm going to take as diligent notes as I can in the presser and kind of do
that.
But it was also... I was also in the situation where I had to, like, readjust my entire thinking of what... You know what I mean? Like, going into the arena, I was like, I have a pretty good idea what I want my gamer to be.
Right.
And then... what happened, and I was like, okay, I need to shift my thinking completely.
I had the benefit of a game that was decided with 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I could kind of, in
well,
my
technically
mind.
Well, I did too.
Oh, that's true. But it was unexpected. We'll talk about Nebraska in a minute. We'll start with Creighton.
Yes.
Since the Jays won 81-55 over Kennesaw State in the opener. Their top three guards were really good. Marcus Zagorowski had 18 points, two shy of a career high, 5 assists for him, 4 of 5 from three-point range. Tyshawn Alexander had 19. Mitch Balick, 4, 7, and 3. But he made a lot of plays that didn't show up on the box score or show up in the box score, just winning plays and affected the game with his leadership and his demeanor. And so those guys were tone setters, and they're going to have to be because Creighton, with its roster situation, Jacob Epperson's out for a long time, maybe the whole season. Davion Mintz is out for the next few weeks. Unclear on Damian Jefferson. He did not play. He injured his foot a couple weeks ago and has tried to kind of tough through it, but wasn't feeling right, I guess, going into Tuesday's game. So he was out, which opened the door for a lot of young guys and inexperienced guys. I mean, Sharif Mitchell got his first career start as a true freshman. Jalen Windham debuted as a true freshman. Kelvin Jones is a grad transfer. He played in his first game. Jet Canfield, a redshirt freshman walk-on, played double-digit minutes in his first game ever. Nick Zeil came off the bench. He's a freshman walk-on who probably won't get a lot of minutes, but he debuted in garbage time because, you know, they could be an injury away from having to turn to him as well. So there's a lot of youth and inexperience, and I think you saw at times, especially in the first half when Creighton started substituting and working in different lineups, that there is a little bit of a lack of just comfortability and continuity with those guys as they were kind of adjusting to college basketball under the lights for the first time. Mm-hmm. But they do have three guards to lean on, so that's a good thing for the Jays, and it definitely worked to their favor on Tuesday.
How many minutes did Sharif Mitchell get?
Good question. I don't have the box score off the top of my or in front of me, but
quite
he started, so he played a lot.
Do you imagine that he'll continue to stay in the starting lineup and play a lot?
If Damian Jefferson's out, then yes. I mean, they don't really have, he was the first guy off the bench in the exhibition when Damian Jefferson started. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of the sixth man right now. And that's not counting Kelvin Jones, who's the big man. He and Christian Bishop they're kind of flip-flop and split minutes evenly at the five for the most part. And so Kelvin Jones is Christian's sub, and Christian is Kelvin's sub, and they'll just, like, rotate. But aside from that, for the other four spots, Sharif is the next guy off the bench. And so when Damian is out, Sharif comes in. That means Mitch Balick slides to the four, and Tyshawn Alexander will play some four, which is a little scary. They had a lineup out there with Jet Canfield, who's 5'10", and Sharif Mitchell, who's like 6 foot.
Oh, really?
So it was a shorter stature lineup. They're not going to get away with doing that against some of the tougher teams on their schedule for very long, obviously, but it's kind of the situation they're in. They're just going to have to make do. And I think be really good at what they want to do well, which they were on Tuesday. They pushed tempo really well. Their first possession lasted 3 seconds, and they got a wide open shot for Tyshawn Alexander. The second possession was 5 seconds, and Tyshawn Alexander got a wide open in rhythm three, hit them both. He and Marcus Zagorowski started the game 5 for 5 from three, and I think 4 of those 5 threes were in transition, just looks that were created by space and pace, and they're good shooters, and they had room to fire away, and then they made them. So, like, those are good shots, the shots that Creighton wants to create. And it was a credit to their vets in particular who kind of set that up and created a lot of that.
First in the country in adjusted tempo, right?
That's right, yeah.
How
after,
about that?
After one day,
yeah.
They're well, not adjusted tempo.
What is it then?
It's average length of possession.
Oh, okay.
So, the raw number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the adjusted tempo that KenPom has, I think, has some strength of schedule baked into it, too, I think.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But the raw, how long did you
have
the ball on offense? Creighton averaged 12.9 seconds.
Wow.
And I looked it up. They made 11 of their first 17 threes.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was probably through the first two-thirds of the game.
11 of the first 17. Okay, yeah,
yeah,
wow.
So, 11 to 17 to start. And of those of those 11 made shots, 9 of them came within the first 10 seconds of the shot clock.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So they were on the attack.
Yeah.
And that's what they have to do. And so, you know, they're not going to get those looks every night. But if they have sort of the pedal to the floor and they're putting pressure on a defense, and they're kind of in attack mode. Even if the defender comes out and tries to take away that jump shot, you can attack that closeout and go downhill and get your offense rolling.
You maybe won't get that many a night, but you'll get about that many if you play that type of way. You know what I mean? Like, if you're able to get out and transition, those transition threes will theoretically always kind of be there. You just have to make them.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's almost easier to be a transition three-point shooting team than a half-court three-point shooting team in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the numbers because I don't really have that available, that data collection system available to me. But I mean, if I had to rate what scenarios are best for Creighton in terms of, since I've been covering the team, in terms of how they shoot, mm-hmm. transition threes are number one.
Really?
Those are the highest percentage three-point shots I get. Number two is like an inside-outside.
Mm-hmm.
The ball touches the paint and then gets kicked out. But they're both, I mean, they shoot it really well at those percentages, but... yeah, in transition they're lethal, man. They're really good, and they were good on Tuesday. So that's like, I think that's part of when you're playing with a young team and you're mixing in new pieces. Like, you have to be good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably gave the ball away a little bit too much than they wanted to. And Kennesaw State mixed in some three quarter court press that I think caught Creighton off guard. I'm not sure why, but it did. It caught them off guard, and they turned over a couple times and. It was pretty effective when Kennesaw State used it, not often, but used it maybe a half dozen times in the game. But when Creighton was, you know, kind of tuned in and had the floor space well and moved the ball, they got the shots they wanted.
Was McDermott happy?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he was really. I mean, he was really complimentary of his leaders.
Sure,
Mitch Ballack. Tyshawn Alexander.
He kind of almost said without saying, like, we're going to need these three.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to need them. I mean, they played 19 minutes in the first half. Those three did.
Really?
So when they go to Michigan next week, they may not come off the floor. You know, like,
yeah.
Those guys are going to have to play a lot early.
Bring some bananas at halftime, and that's right. It. Yeah.
The hydration process starts now.
Yeah, seriously.
No cramping.
He's going to walk around campus with an IV.
All of them. Just roll them in wheelchairs to class. But it's interesting, too, because Greg McDermott was complimentary of Mitch Ballack in particular, because Mitch only scored 4 points. I think it was 2 of 7 from the floor, missed a couple threes. But his impact on the game was evident in other ways. He had a couple really good, like, ball reversals mm-hmm. or skip passes where he just, like, you don't get credit for an assist, but you kind of, like start the
assist.
Offense. It's almost like you're initiating offense by getting the ball on the opposite side of the floor and forcing the other team to rotate, and then your teammates can attack that. He was good there. He had 7 rebounds and 2 offensive rebounds, and then there was a play on a free throw where he found a way to just sort of be there and bother it, and Creighton got an offensive rebound. He didn't get credited for that, but I thought his activity created that chance for him.
Yeah.
And so,
which says something about him, I think, because he's a guy, I think, that walks into a gym and is like, okay, I can go whatever he did at Nebraska last year, you know, 7 of 9 or 7 of 8.
7 of 10, I think.
So, yeah.
From three.
So I think him moving the ball says something that he's not just totally looking for a shot.
Yeah, well, the coaches actually probably want him to shoot
probably
more.
A bit more. And against Michigan, they probably like, hey, you need to be shooting that.
Go ahead and fire those up a little bit more. But I don't know. I also think that what he does well is that sort of facilitation role. Like that's part of his game too. Mm-hmm. You don't want him to totally detract from that piece, his unselfish nature, which affects the rest of the team. He led the team in assists last year, and he was, you know, the second best 3-point shooter, arguably the best given the volume. But Marcus Segurowski shot a better percentage. But you know, I think that you don't want to lose that element by making him like try to force the issue and be more selfish than he needs to be.
Yeah,
so
I agree with that.
But the concern for Creighton is obviously the youth and then the size. They were outmanned at the four. Mitch Bally played the four, and he had to guard a 6'6", 6'8" guy, and that's going to happen.
Yeah, but here's
they gave up some offensive boards, and they fouled maybe too much in the first half, mm-hmm. but they're just going to have to deal with that.
But what you prove though is, and we'll talk about Nebraska later, but what you prove though is they hit 12 threes. Right, mm-hmm. Nebraska and Creighton are similar in that way. We're like 1 through 4, they're small, so you're gonna have to hit shots. Creighton just does. They did last night. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So against Michigan, you know, Michigan I don't think is that big, but they also have John Teske.
Yes,
and they're a little bit thicker than
Creighton.
I would
say like their threes and fours are thick.
So you're gonna have. So that's the thing where it's like that's an actual test. We're like, okay, can you actually make enough threes? Can you make enough shots where you're.
Because you're gonna
size is your deficiencies are made up by the speed.
It's like a possession game. You know, you're always trying to be as efficient as possible, obviously. But if you're gonna give up extra possessions on the defensive end because you give up offensive rebounds just because of your size question, then on the other end, you better be more efficient with the smaller number of possessions you have, so fewer turnovers. More threes, you know, like hitting more shots, more bang for your buck on the offensive end, because defensively, you're going to give that team more chances just because of the nature of it.
Yeah.
That said, I think they could probably do a little bit better, and they, you saw in stretches of that game against Kennesaw State where I thought Creighton had just like a little bit of a lull from an energy standpoint, maybe a tenacity standpoint. I think Greg McDermott got on him in a huddle and on a timeout. That clip was shown on the TV broadcast. Was just like, felt like the Jays were a little flat-footed, and Kennesaw State was kind of the, just had a little bit more, quicker to the ball, quicker to the ball. But Creighton corrected that at halftime. Yeah. And that surge that the Jays had.
So it was a 20-something run,
20-2
right?
run.
Yeah.
Which we didn't actually see a lot of last year from this team. And so, and that was part of their DNA in, with Marcus Foster and Kyrie Thomas kind of leading the way on the wing. Those teams in 16-17 and 17-18, it was like you kind of just waited at some point in the game the Jays were going to just pull away because they were going to overwhelm a team with their pace and their aggressiveness, and that team was going to start feeling the pressure of like, uh-oh, the crowd's getting into it. We got to do something. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's been 2 minutes of action, and, oh, we're down by, you know. In this case, the game, Creighton had an 8-point lead, and they went on a 11-0 run in 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my gosh, I guess we better call timeout.
Yeah.
So Kennesaw State kind of got blitzed right there. And that's something that I didn't see from the Jays very often last year. And I think it was more about trying to just, because to me, that's a result of just being consistent with your energy and effort. And then on the other end, making good decisions offensively and not forcing the issue. And I think with youth last year, they couldn't put it all together. Maybe they get a steal but didn't make the right decision in the backcourt, or they didn't get the stop they needed to get out and run and kind of put that pressure on teams. But 20-2, that was obviously the decisive stretch, and they it seemed like everybody who was on the floor at that point, Christian Bishop, Sharif Mitchell, Segurowski, Balik, Tyshawn Alexander, had a hand in it. Mm-hmm. Like they all made some plays and put the game away.
Yeah.
So they got Michigan next in a week. Though.
Yeah.
So
we'll see. They got a week.
Maybe heal Damian Jefferson up in time. We'll see about that. Huskers.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a surprise. We knew
it was.
We knew that it wouldn't always be pretty with this team.
Yeah.
But I mean, UC Riverside is not good.
Oh no, they're very bad. No, they're actually not good at all. And they actually didn't have their leading scorer from last year.
Oh,
who was a senior and like a 40% 3-point shooter. He was out, so they were down a couple guys. And they still whooped them. There was a point in the game when, I mean, So Nebraska goes up 14-7 at the first TV timeout, and they actually get a standing ovation from the crowd. The crowd's like, I like what I'm seeing. This is great. This is exactly what we signed up for. And in that stretch, first like 6 minutes, Nebraska made 7 of their first 11 shots. Right, looked great.
What about that stretch was good in your mind?
I mean, like, I need to go back and look. I'm going to rewatch it this afternoon. They were getting out. They were getting out in transition. They were moving the ball. A lot of it was Cam Mack. I mean, Cam Mack was finding guys. They were actually catching his passes. And they were just getting right. buckets. Like they hit a couple. I think they hit 1-3. Cam Mack hit a 3. They looked comfortable. They looked fine. So they made 7 of their first 11. And then they made 9 of their next 44. And they got tight. And UC Riverside hit 2 threes kind of near the end of the first half and took a 6-point lead. There was a fascinating moment in that first half where, you know, Tim Miles got just – people hated it because he would try and let his team figure it out on the fly when another team was going on a run. And so – you know, UC Riverside starts to get on this. I think it ended up being a 14-2 run. And Fred just lets them play it through. And finally, they end up hitting, I think, 2 threes in a row. And he calls a timeout. And he's like, what am I supposed to do here? Yeah. But it was just, I think it was so interesting. Here's why they lost, okay? Deshaun Burke goes 0-3 from 3. Hanif Cheatham, 0-2. Gervais Green, 1-5. Smart Curtis, 0-1. It's got to be better than that. They went 6-26 from three-point range.
Did you think that they were good shots? Like, were they in rhythm?
Not really.
Jumpers?
It was kind of a mix. I mean, so Mate went 2-3. And there were a couple times when, like, Hoiberg would come out of a timeout. He's obviously great out of a timeout. His teams almost always get an open shot. There was one point after that exasperated timeout that he took.
Yeah.
They come out and they run this lovely play that I can't remember what it's called, but I love it. And it's just kind of a couple quick passes right at the top of the key. Kvass has a wide open three-pointer. You make that, you know, you kind of, everyone can take a deep breath and you can kind of move on and gain back some of that momentum, and he misses it. And then it's just kind of starts to spiral after that. So there were some pretty good looks. The thing is, though, is, you know, Hoiberg doesn't necessarily want totally, totally clean looks all the time. He wants you to, once you get the ball, if you're open, you need to shoot it. And there were a couple times when guys were hesitant or they weren't quite sure if they were, for whatever reason, allowed to shoot or if they needed to work there. I mean, it was just kind of confusion all over the place, I think.
That's one of the things that I, about your point about Hoiberg, kind of like, hey, take the shot that's available. One of the things that I've learned covering basketball over the last couple of years is the difference between like a challenge shot and a contested shot, mm-hmm. because there'll be a defender in your face, but he's not really bothering the shooter,
right?
Because he hasn't like knocked the shooter out of his rhythm. And like you watch it on TV and you're like, oh, he had his hand up, he must have bothered the shooter.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah.
Not at all, because the shooter was in rhythm and just is like, okay, I'm gonna pull up and shoot.
Right.
So you have to have the confidence to shoot it, even though the defender's close, but know that he's not blocking your shot,
right.
Nor is he going to bother you while you go up, because he's just there,
right? And
he's not like up in you. There's a difference there.
It was just so you're completely right. And a lot of them weren't challenged, really. I mean, honestly, UC Riverside basically they basically did one of two things. They were either ball pressure on a couple guards. So like Deshaun Burke, they were all over. Or with like Cam Mack and Gervais Green, they shaded really hard to one side and basically said, come make a play in the lane, I dare you. Because we've got this 7-footer, Callum McRae, and he's going to do something. And they weren't able to score in the paint. Or they kind of panicked. Like sometimes you panic on how wide open you are. Like a wide receiver will drop a pass because he's like, there's no one within 20 yards of him and he can't believe it. Or you airball 3 because you're like, I have all the time in the world. I can't. So I think at some point there was a... You know, a lot of Nebraska's guards, they were like, are they really just going to give me, like, I'm open from 15 foot. Like, they're just going to give it to me. But they've been conditioned, like, hey, if you shoot that 15 footer, like, you're coming out. Like, we don't want mid-range jumpers. It was deeply ironic, though, that Fred Hoiberg, who led the NBA in three-point shooting his final year, who his second year at Iowa State, the Cyclones led the country in three-point shots, just gets riddled with... So UC Riverside made 7 threes in the first 7 minutes of the second half, and that was the difference. Meanwhile, his team, you know, missed 9 of 44 in the final about 30 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So... It was interesting to quantify
that. It's probably going to be UC Riverside's best shooting game of the year, right?
Maybe, probably. I mean, they were a pretty good shooting team last year. They were in the top 50 in threes.
Okay.
But the thing is, though, is like Nebraska's defensive philosophy from Doc Sadler, which he told me straight up, is like, go ahead and take your three. I don't care. You're not going to beat me from three. That was the problem, because they did.
They did.
And
maybe it's part of that, what I just brought up about like actually contesting a shot instead of just being there.
But so Doc's whole thing is, we're going to let you hit threes, but we're not going to give any points in the paint. Well, UC Riverside scored 22 in the paint. Nebraska scored 18. There you go. You know, like, again, Sadler told me at a Wendy's while eating chili. Yeah. You know, hey, I was head coach at Southern Miss last year. We had a team hit 17 threes on us. We won by 10. Like, we're going to be able to do that. So that's the thing, is it's not like there's going to be a meeting today at the Hawks Championship Center, or excuse me, the Hendrix, and they're going to be like, all right, we need to get out on those threes. No, like, this is the way that they play defense.
Right.
And so I don't know. It's when a bad shooting team shows you who they are, believe them. Right. So last year, Nebraska was not a good shooting team. They didn't shoot well in the exhibition. And yet they were all in on, okay, we're going to shoot a lot of threes. Well, 6 of 26 from 3, 9 of 19 from the free throw line. Yeah. Nebraska went 10 of 20 something, 10 of 23 from the free throw line in the first game. Like, that's good shooting teams don't miss that many free throws.
So do you think now, I mean, it's game one. It's just the start of an era.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be. It's obviously not going to define what Hoiberg's teams are in the long term, but in the short term, like, he's probably not going to tweak what he does, right? Like, they're going. He still wants to shoot threes, push pace.
I mean, here's the
he doesn't have the personnel to do it.
Yeah,
but
here's the issue:
you establish your identity.
You want to go fast, right? And so we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it a million times, but this idea of like, can you go fast enough that you can, basically you're going to be small no matter what, but can you go fast enough to run big guys off the floor and whatever? Well, when you get out rebounded by 20 by UC Riverside and they have 13 offensive rebounds, you can't get out in transition. You can't, because you can't get the ball. And so when you can't get the ball and you get time after time again where you have to play, you know, even longer defense, then once you do get the rebound, it's like, all right, I just played, you know, 50 seconds of tough defense. I don't really want to run right now.
Right.
Like, they want to, but it's just it was just a lot of discombobulation, I think, offensively and defensively. They obviously need some work. And if they got out rebounded by 20 by UC Riverside, who they were 167th in rebounding margin last year in the country, they might not get a rebound against Michigan State. Like, it might be 75-4. I mean, like, you can't do that. And that's also kind of an effort thing. Half of rebounding is effort. Well, and Nebraska didn't have it.
I saw that number 49-29 in terms of rebounds, and I was like, oh, that's just because Nebraska must have missed a lot of shots, you know, then shoot it well. But then when you brought up 13 offensive boards given up, and Nebraska only got 20 defensive rebounds.
11 second chance points, too. So they scored 13 offensive rebounds and 11 second chance points.
Yeah, that defensive rebounding percentage is not very good. And obviously, like you said, how are you going to run if you can't secure a rebound?
When Cam Mack leads you in rebounds, that's not ideal. Ivan Wydrago only had 3. Kevin Cross only had 3. Thor was second with 4, and he only played 15 minutes. Like, the interesting thing about this season is they're not going to change what they want to do, because you sitting on your bench are two guys that could probably get you a double-double last night, Delano Banton and Derek Walker. And you've got Shamil Stevenson, who called himself, he told me he thinks he's the best rebounder on the team. Now, does that fix all of Nebraska's problems? Like, there's a lot that's been made about Shamil Stevenson becoming, you know, he still hasn't heard back from his transfer waiver and all this stuff. He's going to become eligible in like 5 weeks, no matter what.
Like, oh, he's eligible in December.
He's eligible once this fall semester's over.
Okay.
He's so like to he's gonna play this year, so it's not the end of the world that he's not gotten this waiver. Nebraska also took a very long time to even submit that thing. I mean, really long time. Yeah. We didn't know that they submitted it until Nebraska's media day, and that was, you know,
October.
Yeah. So he's gonna come on, and I think he could potentially start and kind of help this a little bit, but. I mean, what last night really showed was, I mean, I think we all knew this was going to be rough. I didn't think we thought it was going to be this rough. Like, I thought this would be a 12-win basketball team, and I think what we saw last night was like an 8-win basketball
But this
team.
Might be the worst. I mean, well, I guess it's just one game, so we don't know, but I guess I didn't quite know what the floor was, and now I'd like,
yeah, that's true.
UC Riverside is the floor.
I mean, UC Riverside's the worst KenPom rated team that they're going to play this year.
Oh,
yes. So here's some depressed. Everyone, just, I don't know what time it is while you're listening to this, but like, take a second, go pour yourself a drink, because here's coming for you. Gardner Webb, those are KenPom rankings of the worst losses in the 2010s
for Nebraska.
Gardner Webb was 181, Samford was 221, Incarnate Word was 228, Wake Forest was 211, UC Riverside was 285. Game one of the Fred Hoiberg era.
Wow.
I know. So
anything can happen.
And
you expect improvement, but honestly, like,
and here's some,
if you can lose to UC Riverside, you can lose, and not just lose, they lost by,
they got their butt kicked.
Yeah, you can lose anybody.
And Southern Utah's coming in, and they scored 110 points in their opener. 62 in the first half. Now they played Bethesda, but like, who's Nebraska? Yeah. You know?
So what in your mind is priority number one for the Huskers after that game? Obviously it's basketball, so one game never has to define a season, and they get to play again very soon. But
yeah, but
you're not going to fix everything. You're not going to fix everything overnight. Yeah. But what's one thing do you think that they'll prioritize?
November basketball doesn't matter, but it shows you where you are, right? And where this team is they can't shoot. And, I want to go back and look. I'll probably do that this afternoon as well, of like what, and I probably should have already done it, but what was the three-point shooting percentage of these guys before they walked in their previous stop, right? Now, Mate was obviously above 40%. That's different, though. But with Cam and Deshaun and Hanif and Gervais and Samari and Thor, I mean, you can't fix shooting immediately. You can't do it in a short time span. But that's the main thing, is like finding guys' shots and then being able to knock it down. Because they've practiced in PBA a lot. They've been able to practice in PBA much easier with Fred Hoiberg than with Tim Miles. With Fred, they can practice in there basically whenever they want. With Tim, it wasn't always that way. So they've been in that arena quite a few times, and they still didn't shoot very well, where theoretically you should shoot better at home than away. So that's my number one priority, because I think that's probably Fred's number one priority. Because when we're talking about Creighton, again, Creighton's small, but they make up for it because they go fast and they shoot threes. That is what Nebraska wants to do as well. And when you can't shoot, it doesn't even matter if you get the rebound anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even kind of matter. So
yeah, you're not.
And that's something that you can fix quicker than rebounding. Rebound, I mean, they're going to get out rebound every single game. It's just, they barely out rebounded Doan. So like, they're going to get out rebounded every game. So you kind of have to just chalk up to that. Like, that's going to happen. But figuring out where your shots are, figuring out, okay, we need to run this play for Deshaun, we need to run this play for Cam, this play for Mate, this play, like, because if they're not going to be able to go out and transition, they need to find some half-court sets that really, really work. So I think that's priority number one. Number two, I think, is they got to care on defense more. They just have to, I mean, that's effort is half of defense is effort. Half of rebounding is effort. Half of defense is effort. And they lacked both of those.
I didn't get to watch it, but like, I wonder too, because they're sometimes when I watch younger players play, I look at it, I'm like, oh, I don't know if the effort was great there. And then I'm like, it could have just been focus, mm-hmm. you know, where you're not, or a lack of anticipation, where, or maybe you're thinking too much mm-hmm. to where you're paralyzed. And then that loose ball's on the ground and you're like, I'm going to dive on that because I know I should. And then when you have gone through that thought process, the other team has already dove on. Like, yeah. I felt like Creighton had that issue at Nebraska where like
yeah.
last year where they were just, I think the moment was just too big for them and they couldn't like free their minds in a way that they could just play hard.
Yeah.
But they thought they were playing hard and they weren't
yeah.
because they were getting beat to loose balls and beat to rebounds and all that stuff. So I wonder if that's... I
think that's an excellent point.
I wonder if that's part of it too. It's just like first game thinking, oh, we got it. We know how to play. And then everything's happening and you're
yeah.
trying to process all of it. And all of a sudden, like, that dude's wide open for three. I got to close out and contest that shot. But now that I've thought about it, he's already made it.
Yeah. Well, and that's an excellent point because I didn't see a lot of guys diving for loose balls. Two, that's one thing that, and this is the second freaking year we have to talk about all this crap, but like, this is a team that doesn't respond to adversity very well. And Fred said that for a while. He's kind of hinted at it for a long time. He kind of said, he's kind of been foreshadowing it, saying, you know, you never really know until you get out there. You never really know what your guys are made of. And, you know, this is a team that they were up 23 in Italy and they ended up winning by like two, I think, because mm-hmm. there was this giant run. Like they don't handle leads well, because once a team hits two shots in a row, then I think what you're saying comes into play, where they're like, oh crap.
Too much thinking.
Yeah, like we're not doing what we need to be doing. And I think in some ways, Fred has so many plays in his head and he's trying to implement the ones he knows that he works. But in a lot of ways, again, it's kind of like a math equation where you can only go so far. And so I think in some ways it's a trick, because I think with this team, with how brand new they are, it's almost easier just be like, hey, let's just go out and run motion, let's just play. But and I think that they do that a little bit, but Fred's system is very play heavy, of like, we're gonna run this and we're gonna run this and we're gonna run this, and things build on each other and that's gonna end up making this in the second half and all this great stuff. And so that, I think, you bring in some more thinking. And so yeah, it's not great. And there's no quick fix. I don't think it maybe gets worse than this.
That's what I thought. But
yeah. But at the same time,
as
we'll
you said,
see.
There are better teams than UC Riverside on the schedule.
Literally every other one. Yeah. The rest, 29 other 30
other games. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it'll get better. I think it'll get better over the year. I liked a lot of things Cam Mack did. I think he just, I can't wait for you to see him. I mean, he's just smart with the ball. He's just smarter than everybody else on the court. Other than him, though, there wasn't a lot to like. And, you know, Smart Curtis only played, you know, 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes. He's probably, behind Mate, probably the best shooter. If they have a shooting problem, I wonder if he plays more.
Yeah.
But then
freshman,
you have to
right?
Yeah, true freshman.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I think they're taking. I was pretty impressed with the way that Hanif Cheatham and Fred Hoiberg took it. I mean, they didn't come in super sulking and, you know, didn't make it a big deal. Fred was very pragmatic about it. Very, you know, Doc Sadler had a tweet yesterday morning that was pretty ominous. And
it was, actually, now that I think about it.
Right. And the thing is, though,
about
is like,
Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
Right?
And the thing is like, if this isn't one of those things. This isn't Nebraska football losing to, you know, Colorado and getting blown out by Ohio State. Like, because the narrative is totally different. The coaches thought that team was going to be good. They're not. These coaches, these Nebraska basketball coaches, have been telling us in press conferences, not in press conferences, that they're not good.
Right.
But there's a difference between hearing that and then seeing it. And so I think their reaction showed me a lot of, like, they mean it. Like, they clearly, I mean, they're not very good. So,
I kind of took them at their word, but I just didn't know it was, like,
that word. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I tell you, like, you know, I'm a pretty bad speller. and you're like, yeah, okay, but then I spell your name and I start it with a Q, and you're like, ah, well, oh, okay, that's different.
It's a different, yeah, way to describe it. All right, yeah. So they got Southern Utah
Saturday,
yeah. And we'll be back next week to break it down. Creighton has Michigan.
What day is that? Is that Tuesday?
Tuesday, cool. At Michigan. Obviously, it's a early chance for a statement for the Jays, and I don't know what to expect from Michigan because I haven't seen them play yet. Yeah. I got the game on DVR, and I'll watch it in the next coming days and put together a report and a scouting report. But I know that Michigan, you mentioned John Teske in the middle. That's mm-hmm. going to be a problem for the Jays. He's either they're going to guard him one-on-one, and he's going to foul Creighton's big men out of the game,
yeah.
Or they're going to have to bring double teams and do some funky things to yeah. try to keep him from dominating. I think he had double-double in their opener against Appalachian State. They built a 30-point lead, Michigan did, in Juwan Howard's first game, and then nearly lost it in the second half.
Did they really?
Yeah, they won by 8, and the lead got cut to 5.
Oh, woof.
I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I think it's just yeah. like a team kind of thinking, hey,
Michigan's going to be weird to watch this.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're going to, you know, what they're going to look like. Yeah. I know that they have 3 experienced guys that are gritty, sort of been through the wars and know what success looks like.
Yeah.
So, to me, the challenge for Creighton is, can you bottle up that mentality that you had at home, the aggressiveness, and take it on the road? Mm-hmm. And even when you get hit with some adversity, keep going.
Yeah.
And so, we'll see if they can do it.
That's going to be great.
If Nebraska and Creighton played?
Oh, boy. I think Creighton probably wins by 35.
How much did Creighton win by? 26 over Kennesaw State, so I'd go
it's
with
probably
that
about a. It's probably about 100 to... What is that, 65?
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Nebraska's got some work to do. All right, Chris, thanks for your time. We'll be back here next week to talk some more hoops.